You may have heard me mention in the past, there's a common spice or an herb that's used in, you know, cornbread stuffing for Thanksgiving. It's called sage. Well, let me read what this research says right here. In one small study, healthy women drank sage tea. And that's, there's nothing fancy about that. You take the herb or the spice sage, and you just pour some hot water over it, let it steep. And the hot water has this unique ability to help act as a solvent to sort of dissolve. Now I'm getting a phone call from California. Anyway, the let's go. I'm going to have to turn this phone off. That's all there is to it. And so in simplicity, when you take sage tea and you drink it, here's the result right here. They made the tea with 4 grams of sage. That is not very much. If you had just a very small scoop, most likely, I'm guessing a third of a teaspoon, not even a half of a teaspoon. That's not much, right? That's what you could do to make this. Now, they made the sage tea twice a day. After 4 weeks, when they did a follow-up blood test, they noticed that they had a very significant reduction in the total cholesterol. Most people are hit pretty hard when they go to their physician and their cholesterol reaches 200 or above. Or if somebody has total cholesterol around 300, that tends to cause nurses and doctors to freak out. But the concept is, if your body becomes in better working order, it'll be much easier for you to have better cholesterol levels. So when your body's in need of serious repair, your cholesterol levels go up. And so they show that the total cholesterol went down with these women that drank sage tea twice a day, and the LDL cholesterol, which is sometimes called the bad cholesterol, especially the form called LDL type C, it's really a lipoprotein, that went down too. And the good cholesterol, usually called the HDL cholesterol, well, guess what happened to that? That actually increased. And so that's interesting. Now, this is really the main reason why I want to bring this up just briefly. Not that terribly long ago, there was a very interesting randomized placebo-controlled double-blind study, which means nobody knew what the person was getting, but they showed that the researchers did that an extract from sage, and that would qualify taking sage tea, it helped improve the memory and the attention in healthy older volunteers. So I said, okay. And so there's another study. They gave sage extract to people that had mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. And after 4 months, those taking the sage extract, they showed a significant improvement in cognitive functions and less agitation as compared to the placebo group. Sage has also been shown in one study to improve both memory and mood in younger populations. You know, I kind of wonder to myself here, what would happen if we were to give young boys that have ADD a little bit of sage every day? And to maybe make it taste better, well, we could just use the time-honored tactic of putting a little bit of raw honey in something. Anyway, all right. I'm going to move on to my next favorite topic right here. For today, I meant. You know, I started thinking this morning about Dr. James Joseph. He's a gerontologist. And I remember that study he did with rats years ago. You know, one of the things they do with rats is they build this complicated maze that they have to... They have a starting point, or the starting line. And at the very end of the maze, if they can solve it, they have a prize. Now, what most researchers use as a prize probably shouldn't surprise any of it, but the more I read this, I'm thinking, oh, great. Well, the way that they can coax these animals or the rats to work through the, or solve the mystery of getting through the maze as fast as possible, is they give them a treat at the end. And you're probably thinking, well, what exactly is the treat, Dr. Morgan? Well, you know, the only thing they need to motivate a rat to figure out how to work this maze as fast as possible, they use a very popular breakfast cereal. It would be called Fruit Loops. And you're probably thinking to yourself, are you kidding me? You mean just Fruit Loops is enough to motivate a rat to go from not knowing where the prize is to running through that sucker as fast as possible and getting the Fruit Loop? Yeah. And the only thing they have to do is, I don't know if it's a purple one, a yellow one, or an orange, or green, or yellow. I don't know if that makes a difference. Maybe one's more addictive than the other. But they don't even give them a whole Fruit Loop. The only thing they need to do to motivate them is just to snap the Fruit Loop in half. And they put that at the end of the maze, or where you would, push the button and get the half of a Fruit Loop. It doesn't take an entire bowl of Fruit Loops to do it, just half of a Fruit Loop. But going back to Dr. James Joseph, his idea was, are there any foods that human beings or mammals, in this case it was rats, is there anything that we could give them that could improve the performance of their mind and their cognition and their ability to solve problems like working through a maze to find the prize? And out of all the things that he tested, and of course, you know, he fed rats these foods to see if it could improve their performance. And there were two foods, and I think there were only two really, that if he gave these two unique foods to rats, they could almost as if go back to their childhood and start solving problems more quickly as compared to when they were considered very old rats. Maybe they're around 575 days old, which that would make you an old rat. That's compared to maybe a 39-day old rat, which would be like a young teenager anyway. So these two foods, and it's no mystery, one was blueberries, so Dr. James Joseph knows that if you fed blueberries to these older rats, all of a sudden they could regain their ability to navigate and work this maze. And they could do it just about as well as the young teenage rats could do. So, you know, this is food for thought. So here's a simple concept. If your brain or your mind is not working exactly the way that you want it, which, if you ask me my opinion, I think the most difficult thing to do while we're living on this planet is controlling thoughts. That's just my opinion. You may have something else that you think is much harder to contend with, but I think controlling your thoughts and rendering every thought unto obedience is very, very challenging. Maybe I'm just talking to myself here, but in these rats, when Dr. Joseph fed them blueberries, all of a sudden, they could get through the maze a lot faster as compared without the blueberries. Maybe he was just feeding them standard Purina rat chow. I don't know. Probably something like that, grain-based. The other food, you want to guess what it is? It begins with the letter S. It's a green leafy vegetable. Some people like to put it in salads, or some people like to saute it with butter and eat it with their eggs in the morning. Well, it's spinach. And so, let me read this to you real quick. And this is only one idea, but I want you to kind of hang on to this because we've got to find a way to make all this stuff work. So, everybody knows that there's a particular water-soluble vitamin that we as human beings, we just can't make. It's impossible. We lack the enzyme. Other animals can make it. They don't have a problem. It's called vitamin C. Vitamin C is so critical to the health of a human being that we can't live without it. If you try living without it, well, guess what? You'll develop a disease called scurvy. Who wants bruises and bloody patches all over their body as your joints pop and creak and they become so fatigued they can't stand up without bone crunching pain? No, nobody wants to have scurvy. So spinach is actually a decent source of vitamin C. But what I was reading was, within 7 days of harvesting the spinach, and you know what I mean, you go out to the garden, you take your scissors or your knife, or whatever you use, maybe a steel chainsaw, I'm just joking about that, but you remove the spinach, and once you wash it, that's going to be the best nutrient density you're ever going to have if you eat it right then and there. But in this study right here, it says, this is from a professor at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston. He goes on to say, his name is Guy Crosby, Ph.D. He's a food scientist. if you're a food scientist, you study food, and I just find this interesting. He says, within 7 days of being harvested and being stored around room temperature, 100% of the vitamin C is gone in spinach. It just disappears in the thin air. It may look like spinach on the outside, but the nutritional value of spinach is just about completely gone. And I thought to myself, okay, if I go into the grocery store and I just happen to walk by the produce aisle and I look at the date, best used by or best eaten by on the spinach, and I look at that day after day, well, what if that same spinach has been there in the produce section for 10 days before they pull it from the shelves? And I think to myself, well, I wonder if maybe this was shipped from a farm in California 2 weeks ago, which might add a little bit more time to it. But listen to this right here. Spinach retains more nutrients, however, when it's refrigerated, but it still loses about 75% of them over the 7 days. So at room temperature, it'll lose 100% of the vitamin C. If you refrigerate it, it only loses 75%. But you know, you want to get a big bang for your buck. And if you're going to get your kids to eat spinach that's full of nutrients that helps feed and nourish the brain, you might want to get some nutrient density from it. But consider this. The consistent theme that I hear over and over again is I buy vegetables, but they go bad in the refrigerator before I get to them. I know you've heard that before. But what happens if they harvest it from the field, but they immediately freeze it and store it in the freezer? Well, listen to this right here. At the end of 1 year of spinach being frozen, guess how much nutrients have disintegrated? Only 30%. It's nearly 100% after 7 days at room temperature. What do you think about, if you're trying to find a way to improve your brain or improve your health, what about frozen vegetables? Yes, it would be best if you went out to your herb garden and you picked them fresh, but you can't always do that. So anyway, that is food for thought for you. Now, the next thing. This is still from Dr. Crosby. Dr. Crosby, who works at Stanford University, he did a meta-analysis. I'm sorry, he didn't work there. He's at Harvard or the T.H. Chan School of Public Health. There's a Stanford University study, and they look at over 200 studies, and they're asking the question, well, what's better for you, organic produce or just regular conventional produce where they spray them with pesticides and use lots of man-processed fertilizers and such? Anyway, when he looks at the nutrient density, he says he really can't find much of a meaningful, significant difference between organic and conventional. Now, I'm not saying this to bring you down, but he goes on to say, well, there is another pretty significant difference between the two of them. Organic foods, they have the least amount of pesticide contamination or pesticide residue. And I think you can just kind of ponder that in your heart for a moment, because you are not better off by having more pesticides or herbicides or chemicals in your body. You're just not. But listen to this one right here. He goes on to quote the study that was done in France in the year 2018. There was a study in the JAMA, the JAMA Journal. What is that, the Journal of the American Medical Association of Internal Medicine? It showed that among 70,000 adults, consumers of organic food, they presented 25% fewer cancers than those who never ate organic foods. Okay. So, as well as I do, at every turn, another loved one, another friend, another dear one from church that you love and care about is going to have a diagnosis of cancer. This number may not sound very significant to you, but when they looked at 70,000 adults that consumed organic food, they had 25% fewer cancers than those who never ate organic. Okay? 2 years earlier, a meta-analysis in the British Journal of Nutrition found that organic meat and milk, they provided 50% more omega-3 fatty acids than non-organic products. Well, what does that tell you? You have a better shot of providing nutrients for the function of your brain and your heart and your nervous system as compared to eating just conventionally raised, you know, meat and dairy products. So, what's the message this morning? Well, if you can't get a hold of fresh spinach from your garden, maybe you could consider frozen organic spinach, and that would give you a little cushion there to where you can have some time to think about repairing it one way or the other and getting the benefit from it. Now, listen. Here we go. I read this this article this morning, and I'm trying to think, where does it come from? The Journal of Clinical Medicine. All right, here we go. One thing that you probably know, any time that you have a vegetable or a plant that has a lot of green color to it, well, anything that's green is rich in minerals. That's good for you. You've got to have minerals to make all your, or aid all your systems in doing your job and working properly. But one of the minerals that you find in abundance in spinach is called magnesium. When I have read studies before about the amount of magnesium that the average American gets, well, most studies show that Americans are significantly lacking. Another article that I read a long time ago, it showed that every time that a person drinks a soft drink, like a soda water, because of its very, very acidic nature, and because it contains a substance called phosphoric acid, which is very acidic, your body, to counter that acid, will start dumping magnesium. But what that means to you is it starts dumping your precious reserves of magnesium that you need to help your body manage inflammation and to deal with stress and to improve blood flow. And so people that have low levels of magnesium when they're tested by a lab test, well, guess what? They are most likely to have the highest elevated levels of a marker called C-reactive protein. And so if you go to the doctor and everything on your blood test comes back perfect except for that one marker called C-reactive protein, what are you going to do if that's high? Well, I just mentioned that if you're low in magnesium, you are the most prone or the most vulnerable to having higher levels of C-reactive protein. What happens when you have higher levels of C-reactive protein? What does that really mean? That means you have a significant source of inflammation and your body's kind of drowning in it. You are not better off by having inflammation rule your body. No, no, no. If you do, then a lot of your systems are going to start to break down. For example, your brain could break down a little bit more prematurely. Well, you tell me, would you rather keep your wits about you for the entirety of your life, or would you rather have this very negative drop-off when you're just 55 years of age? Well, you already know the answer to that. They also showed that when C-reactive protein is elevated, they know that usually that goes hand in hand with low magnesium. The other thing that I noticed, though, when I read this article, they always made the correlation when this marker of inflammation, C-reactive protein, is elevated, that's really becoming one of the most accurate markers that you can look at to predict if someone's going to be prone to depression. You're at great risk of being depressed or down or blue when your C-reactive protein levels, which is a marker of inflammation, is higher. You know, I like Dr. Russell Jaffe's definition of inflammation. He calls it repair deficit. That means your body's not able to make repairs. That's not a good place to be in. You may have heard this also, that when you experience continual stress or you feel uneasy or jittery or nervous on the inside, you could probably say, you know what? I feel stressed. And so when you're stressed, you can bet your bottom dollar your body is flushing out and just burning through magnesium that you're holding in reserves. And so if this magnesium gets flushed out, well, what do? Well, number one, it would help if you would consume foods that were rich in magnesium to replace what you're losing. Okay, here we go. I know that you're not a mouse or a rat, but I think it's good to know that we can have something we can test these ideas out on without causing harm to a human being. Well, in the year 2018, there was a study published in the Journal of Clinical Medicine, and they found that spinach reduces stress and depression in mice. So before you say that's not valid, why don't you just try it for yourself? What if you are legitimately feeling that you are at your wit's end? What if you feel like you can't take any more? What if you feel quite overwhelmed by the circumstances of your life? You know, the Bible tells us it's going to be through trials and tribulations that we enter the kingdom. And all of us know that you're going to be tested. Maybe you're going through a significant test right now. Well, what do you say we try to help strengthen and fortify your resolve? So if you hear that giving spinach to mice lowers their stress levels and their depression levels, well, you know, just consider it. Okay. Here's the other one I wanted to look at right here. This comes from the Journal of Affective Disorders. And so when you read a journal like that, you're thinking, okay, what about the function of a person's mind and emotions and their mood? Research points to green leafy vegetables like spinach because they have very abundant levels of a B vitamin called folate. Which when you have it, guess what happens? Your body produces the brain chemical called dopamine. When you have plenty of dopamine, you feel like you want to be around other people. When you have a lack of dopamine, you do not. When you have dopamine, you feel like you're calm and you're steady and you're very focused. And you can get things done. And you feel internally you're in a much better place. So among 2,800 middle-aged, two elderly people, those who consume folate, and you know, spinach is a great source of that, and that's one of the things that they consume, these green leafy vegetables, they had a much lower risk of showing symptoms of depression. That's from a 2012 study. So let's not make this too difficult. You've got to have food. I mean, God knows that. He's the one that designed it. But without food, how are you going to be the best version of yourself? You can't do it on junk food. There's no way your brain's going to work right if all you do is eat fast food all day long. So give yourself a chance to be very successful in this world. Eat real foods that God has made and see if all of a sudden you start liking the way that you think and you like the way that you feel. How about that? Now, here's another one. I know this is so obvious, but this did catch my attention. I know you've heard me say before that if I just quickly scan all the people that I've taken care of over the last 30 years, it's a no-brainer. The ones that tend to move the most and move the fastest, they tend to live longer than anyone else, and they have the fewest health problems. As opposed to someone that's extremely sedentary and they just don't move. Well, in this study published in Medicine and Science in Sport and Exercise, that's the title of the journal, they found that the least sedentary people, that means the people that are the most active, they had the lowest levels of inflammation even if they weren't losing weight. And here's how they measured it. The people that were the most active, here's how they defined it. They got about 2.5 hours of moderate to vigorous activity per day. It didn't even say the word exercise at all. It just included regular life activities like raking the yard or mowing the grass or picking up limbs or doing household chores like mopping and vacuuming and cleaning. See, they're even running around the house picking up Legos after kids leave them on the floor counts. And see, even a small amount of activity lowers inflammation. So what are you left with right now? You're probably thinking to yourself, well, how does this apply to me? Well, the way it applies to you is, if your body is not working properly, if you have aches and pains, if you feel sluggish, one recipe is eat foods that rid the body of inflammation. And spinach is one of those. What's the other thing you can do? Move more. Move your body. I think it's very easy at the end of the day for you to just sit in a chair and say, I'm just too tired to move. I think I'll watch television. But what if you start moving your body? Well, guess what? Inflammation goes down. Inflammation plays an extremely powerful role in driving the development of arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, infections, and cancer. So you can just kind of fill in the blank. What do I want? I want you to have abundant life, and I want you to be productive and feel good. It is so much easier to try to take good care of yourself before you have a major health crisis. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Warner. I have two people, but especially one that I'm asking about. I tried to get as much information on him. He's our song leader at our church. Wonderful, wonderful godly man. And him and his wife both. That he is suffering tremendously from rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. I have I've heard some of your podcasts, anyway, I've got some information, but I wanted to bring you tell you what a little bit about it. He's diabetic. He's roughly my age, 60-ish. He's normal size, you know, he's not overweight or anything. He's outdoor person, anything and everything outdoors. They try to eat healthy. He is, but he is diabetic. He is on heart medicine. He's on a couple of medicines if you need to know what they are. And, just whatever I've told him about the intermittent.
You are.
Mm-hmm. Fasting, which I've been doing, and thank you. It's helping a lot.
Oh, good. Good girl.
And let's see. I've told, kind of still foggy. I can't remember what all I've told him, but anything you can tell me.
When you told him about skipping breakfast and just having two meals a day, did he seem to really catch on to that?
Well, I didn't tell him. I told his wife, and she's done it, and she said yes. But she didn't know that would help with that. She's done that, and it helps and just energizes and all this stuff. So she said she didn't think he'd have any problem with that.
Well, I did. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You.
Excuse me. I heard you say diabetic earlier.
Yes.
So I realized
diabetic.
All these things can be kind of scary because usually the typical dietary advice you get is to snack frequently in an effort to try to keep your blood sugar up and keep it from going too low. But I think that's kind of a problem. So where my mind went with this a while ago, and I realize this is going to sound quite radical, but one of the earliest studies that I ever read about treating people with very, very severe rheumatoid arthritis is they tried a very radical therapy that was free, meaning it didn't cost anything and it actually saved them money.
We all live that.
In today's environment, having something that's free and non-toxic is a pretty good deal, isn't it?
It's a blessing.
But in this study, I want to say there might have been 20 people. I realize that's a very small study, but the results were just phenomenal. They took people that had highly inflamed, painful joints with rheumatoid. Now, I'm not going to go into all the different joints in the body where it can hit, but let's just say, for example, it's pretty common in the fingers and the hands and the wrist, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And he plays guitar and stuff.
Well, he needs his fingers in great working order, right?
Yes.
So in this study, all they asked these people that were just horrible sufferers of rheumatoid arthritis, they asked them to fast with just water only for 3 days. And I want to say in this study, 87% of those that had rheumatoid had very, very good results, and there was a small percentage they couldn't tell a difference. And I think to myself, okay, I think that's legitimate, because you can't expect 100% results from, you know, from everybody's different. But so I thought to myself, okay, I really wonder, Roy, what's at play there? And, you know, my conclusion is every person that I've ever seen that's had rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm thinking of one lady that I took care of years ago, her worst symptoms were in her fingers, wrists, elbows, but her thumbs were just killing her. And we figured out real quick what the deal breaker was. It was, in her case, it was eating wheat. If she did not eat wheat, then her immune system didn't attack the joints. And so as long as she stayed away from wheat. So when somebody has severe rheumatoid and diabetes, always think, what are they eating that's generating a very negative immune response? Because rheumatoid is an autoimmune disease, which means it's his body attacking him.
Yes.
The other thing,
I did mention about the wheat and the sugar. She said he doesn't eat that much. He's been trying to do like just the rye bread, but when he does and stuff like that. But
I totally respect that. But all it takes is just a thimbleful once a month. That's it. The long-term studies show, and I know this sounds radical, just ponder it, but even one small amount of wheat once a month is enough to get your immune system all revved up and go into a full attack mode. So I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm just saying this is kind of a special category of rules right here.
And no, so, I'd much rather know.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And for me, too, and I'd always thought, well, just a little bit, my body got, I did not realize it was even that much.
Well, I would almost rather him have a spoonful of honey every day, and you'd say, hey, that's bad advice. He's got diabetes. I think we'll find out real quick he does better with a spoonful of honey than he would ever do with just a smidgen of wheat. And so, I mean, I learned that lesson the hard way. I wish I could tell you, I mean, I was just right there with everybody else. I thought a little bit can't do it, but when it comes to an autoimmune disease, that is the only way that you're going to turn that off, because that's the trigger. And if wheat is his trigger, he could just have one small piece of toast once a week, and for the rest of the week, he's got inflammation to deal with. And so as he's hurting, I can tell you this, his body's not repairing anything. He's almost going backwards. So there's only two options. We've either got to move forward, improve, or we go backwards. We decline. We deteriorate. Another thing that came to my mind, if I can, because this is easy to do right here.
Yes.
There is a tea called dandelion root tea. And I read one study that people had horrible arthritic pains from rheumatoid. After about 3 weeks of drinking 2 cups of dandelion tea a day, they all reported they had much less pain. They could move their bodies better. But if I told you my personal favorites, I am convinced that ginger is one of the most interesting, if you want to call it a spice or an herb, fine by me. But when people consume ginger, I just think wonderful things happen when it comes to helping the immune system better manage inflammation. So he could drink ginger dandelion tea all day long if he wanted to.
I did know the ginger for the inflammation, and I am getting more into that. I'm not for sure who all brings you stuff, but I'm the one that brought you 3 different homemade kombuchas to try out. And one
yes, I highly recommend you repeat that experiment again, because I haven't done enough field research on your kombucha. It's going to require a lot more effort on your part for me to really have a good, you know, you do want me to be honest about my opinion, don't you?
Oh, yes. And my new one is pear, because
because you had pears?
Because I have pears, exactly.
Oh, there you go.
I think I brought you watermelon, because watermelon was at the time. And then I did apple, and it just reminds me more of apple cider.
You know what I think you can do? I think you could probably mix some ginger in with that pear and make like a pretty cool solution. Oh, good.
I did. I've done that the last 2 times, and that's why I was saying I'm adding more ginger to different things.
The only way that I've ever seen someone with rheumatoid and diabetes heal is if they cut out grains. I know I sound harsh and just real blunt that way, but I know you want me to be honest with you. So if I can convince him to start eating vegetables and maybe a little bit of meat like fish and maybe chicken and eggs, I think he would be in a better place in about 3 weeks.
Since we've cut out the grains and stuff, I mean, like, once in a great. My grandson loves my French toast, so I try to get the absolute best bread I can get because I know I'm going to. Grandma has to eat with him too.
Well,
so.
It's your duty to make sure it's fit for consumption, right?
Yes, but so it's once in a great while. But I can tell so much of the difference of not doing wheat and not doing sugar. It's a world of difference.
So you're really in a better place, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. You're such a good girl.
I'm trying. I'm working on it. It's tempting here and there, but I'm working on it.
You know, you got that guy's attention when he comes up to you after church and says, you know what? At first I didn't believe you. I thought this was kind of hokey, but, you know, what you're saying was really proven to be correct. I had a man tell me last week?
What?
He said, Dr. Morgan, he said, when I came to you with my severe neuropathy of my legs and the burning and tingling and the numbness, I really thought you were a voodoo witch doctor when you told me to start walking barefoot.
And I decided that I was going to totally prove you wrong. And
the way I was going to prove you wrong is I was going to, in spite of what you told me, I was going to walk barefoot on the grass and the dirt for 15 minutes a day. And I'm glad to inform you that my neuropathy is completely gone after doing that for 2 months. And I kind of thought that was funny right there.
I told my sister about the walking in the dirt and stuff and all. And, yes, it is making a big difference. But I didn't think you was a voodoo doctor whenever you had me testing. You said I was a little bit on my peanut and all the stuff you was doing.
Oh, good. That's a bonus for me today.
I went by faith as to what you was doing. You knew more of what you were doing than I did. Yes.
Well, but you're better off for it, right?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
And I did find
thank
my article.
Lord, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome very much. I did find the article that ginger is very effective at relieving pain from rheumatoid arthritis. And they said there's two ways you can do it, which I know you've already figured this out. They said you can either apply the ginger topically over the inflamed joint. You know what I always think of in my mind? Your skin is going to literally drink up about 60% of whatever you put on top of it. So if you were to take a sunscreen that's full of titanium and ground up zinc molecules, may not want to put that on your skin because your skin will absorb it like a sponge. But what if you put olive oil and beeswax and ginger over a joint that's highly inflamed and you said, oh, my word. This is the best that my knee has felt in a long time. But they said also, internal use of ginger is very, very good. Now, I know that what I'm saying is probably a little bit philosophical, but do you know what the word stagnation means or stagnant?
Oh, yes.
Like if you and I were walking through the woods and I said, oh, my word, I'm so thirsty. I wish the plane crash hadn't destroyed my bottle of, oxygen water or whatever. But we had to have water to drink. But we came across a pond that beavers were swimming in, and I said, I don't think I want to drink that water that looks kind of black with algae and duck. But if we came across a mountain stream where the water's flowing very fast and it was clean, I'd say, thank the good Lord we have water to drink. Well, stagnant would be like that beaver pond water. It's just kind of sitting there. All the yucky stuff is growing in it. But I'm always thinking that when somebody has horrible rheumatoid pain, I think of that as stagnation. I just think stuff is stuck. And so we got to get that stuff moving. So ginger is one of my favorite herbs or spices to give a person that's got stagnant. There's a different way of saying this. I'm not saying it translates real well, but I always think to myself when I examine somebody, I think, this person's got dirty blood. I know that doesn't sound scientific to say, hey, you've got a bunch of dirty blood, ma'am or sir. You got dirty blood. But
it's true.
But the benefits are when the blood is cleaner and there's less dirt and debris and toxins. So anything that helps improve how... See, the faster that blood flows through the body, the cleaner it is. A person's not magically better off by laying in a bed for 3 weeks and not getting up even one time. That would be disastrous, wouldn't it?
Yes.
So ginger is very, very, very good for that. So
how much should he be taking? Like a day,
well,
roughly capsule.
Let me give you a kind of a crazy idea here.
Okay.
What if his wife started using ginger to cook with? And so she just kind of works it into maybe like a chicken vegetable dish of some kind, or she puts on top of some fish that she's cooking in butter. That would be one way of doing it. Another way of doing it would be to just get ginger tea where you pour hot water over it and let it steep, and you make kind of an infusion from ginger that way, and you just sip on it and drink it down. Probably the most potent way that I know of, if a person says, I cannot go one day longer feeling this horrible, what do I do? We might go to the grocery store and just buy a fresh ginger root and just run that root through the juicer. Ginger's pretty potent stuff.
Yes, I've like long if you ever, like said, a, I had an illness a long time ago. Though, I mean, I could not even keep down a teaspoon of water, and I got the ginger root and put it in there, and I mean, I would just take a drop at a time and just slowly over time just kept increasing it, and finally got to where that was the only way I would have ended up in the hospital dehydrated.
It kept you from going to the hospital. But you just were very patient, and you kept doing it every so often until you got to a good place. Well, see, it saved your life.
Yes, it did.
Well, I thank you so much for your phone call. I'll try to let somebody else call, but let me know what happens with your song leader.
Thank you.
Greatly. You're welcome. Thank you. Have a good day, ma'am. Bye-bye. If you would like to call and join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. Sometimes that button doesn't activate as fast as I want. I'm sorry. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a problem with hair loss, and I was wondering, is there something that you can take internally to help with reducing the DHT? I think that's what it's called. I know that witch hazel and rosemary help the outside part.
Man, you know what you're talking about. You're a genius.
But is there something else I can do or take internally or something that would help with that?
Okay, I'm going to be a little technical, and please forgive me. There is an enzyme inside of your body called the aromatase enzyme. And that's what converts testosterone, that's what, in men, it'll convert testosterone into DHT or estrogen, which is what you don't want. And women, it'll convert it into DHT, which also is what you don't want, because you start going, I'm a woman. I'm not supposed to look like a man that loses his hair. And so one of the things that can help down-regulate that is a mineral called zinc. And so if a woman was low in zinc, here's some of the things you could see. I'm looking at my fingernails. Sometimes when a human being is low in zinc, you'll look at their fingernails, and they'll have this kind of just a white splotch. Sometimes it's called stippling or banding, but it's white marks on the nail bed. Do you see those on your fingernails?
I have in the past, but not very often. But I do have ridges.
The other thing, and I'm going to go on to this topic right here. It's real famous if a person has high blood pressure that the doctor says, oh, my goodness, you got to stay away from salt right now. If you have any salt, you're asking for trouble, get off of all salt. Well, the problem is when a person comes off salt, which you need salt to function, you start to lose your strength and your energy, and you feel like you're completely drug out and you're exhausted and like somebody pulled the carpet out from under you, and you just sit in a chair going, well, I would like to get up out of the chair and go do some yard work, but I have no energy. And that's very typical of low sodium. So without being more complicated than what I should be, the mineral zinc, it plays a role when it comes to how your body manages salt. So, for example, if a person is very low in zinc, there's one of two natural things that you're going to see over and over again as far as cravings. You're either going to crave salty things or sweet things. But I would say the most common is when you're low in zinc, your body just naturally craves salt more. This would be you and your husband going for Mexican food, and you grab the salt shaker and you start shaking away over the tortilla chips. You would never do that, would you?
No, I don't, actually. I do limit my salt. you know, to just a little bit. Like when I cook, after I cook instead of while I'm cooking. And I've been very careful with the salt because I used to have swelling in my ankles, and I don't have that very often anymore. But I do crave sugar a lot.
Okay, so you're in plan B. Well, and it is more common. If your body lacks zinc, you have more of a craving for salt and then mm-hmm. sugar next, which you realize I'm not trying to jump you over that topic. So let me say this right here. If you're low in zinc, it may be that the activity of your aromatase enzyme goes through the roof, and that's just converting your female hormones into DHT, which is causing hair loss. Mm-hmm. And so there's two or three ways to take care of that. Number one, you could just ask a question, well, I wonder what would happen if I just took more zinc. And like anything else, you're just giving your body the very substance it needs so it can do the work at hand. It would be just like if you were deficient in vitamin D3 or vitamin K2 or niacin. Things would stop working properly because you're lacking nutrients. But other things that have been shown to greatly help improve the aromatase enzyme activity that leads to the hair loss in women, there's a type of a mushroom called chaga. And I've read a lot about it here recently just because I'm a very curious person about things that God has made. But chaga has been shown to greatly downregulate the aromatase activity. I even read an article a couple weeks ago about men that had prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And it showed when they consume mushrooms daily, all of a sudden their PSA levels start going down lower and lower and lower. But see, that's very, very advantageous. If there was a drug and medicine or a treatment that would do that without causing horrible side effects, oh my goodness, I'd be on board with that. I'd be recommending it. I'd say, hey, go to your medical doctor, get this drug. But that doesn't actually exist. And so mushroom extracts are very valuable for trying to balance hormonal control of the body.
Okay. Now, I'm in my 60s, and so, you know, my hormones are a little bit different anyway, so that would help me a great deal with it if I took the mushroom extract.
You have absolutely nothing to lose by just experimenting with them. And the way I think of it, this is food that God has made, and let's just see if we can help assist your body in regaining some of its function or improving your hormonal health by okay. consuming mushrooms. The reason I said chaga is because that stuff is so nutrient dense. Guess what I drank this morning before I came to the radio station?
I don't know.
Good, I can tell you. I had a bag of turmeric ginger tea. I put just a smidgen of raw wildflower honey in it, just a little bit, just so it didn't taste kind of bitter. And then I put just a small spoonful of chaga mushroom powder.
Hmm.
Of course, that makes me happy.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's now, very easy to do. It doesn't taste bad to me.
on the mushroom powder, does that include the chaga, or is it all different kinds of mushrooms?
Well, yeah, all mushrooms are very unique. When I said chaga, I'm referring to just one unique, and you can actually buy those chunks of that mushroom dry, and you can grind them up yourself in a coffee bean grinder, or you could go to the health store, and you could just buy the powder that's already been ground up, but the stuff is so easy to put in warm water or hot water, it just dissolves and breaks right down.
Okay.
There's a lot of things, you know, that just don't stir, mix in well, but chaga is not one of them. It's easy.
Oh, okay. Well, I know I've taken your advice on taking the Great Lakes collagen powder.
Do you think that's been a benefit?
I think so. It's helped with my digestion. I know that.
Well, that's a bonus.
And I'm hoping it would help with other things, too, you know.
You know, ginger is very, very famous for helping people with digestive problems because it helps keep, and that's what I meant by stagnation with the last caller.
Right.
You don't want anything sitting in your stomach for like 4 days before it moves to the small intestine. You want it to move from north to south pretty efficiently, and ginger really aids with that. So a lot of these Asian dishes that include ginger as a spice are really so good for the gut.
How much turmeric and ginger root and powder do you put in your glass for the morning drink?
You know, there's a lot of people, they drink this stuff called golden milk where they take a spoonful of the turmeric. But I think it's very, very safe. It's just a matter of personal opinion and taste. But just as long as you have the idea that a little bit's good for you, you can start out with small amounts and find out how your body tolerates it. Now, before you start dumping a heaping tablespoon of each into a glass of water and drinking it, we should probably start out with smaller amounts. But just test the waters and see what level you get to. But it may be that a half a teaspoon of each is going to be really good.
Okay. All right. And let's see, it was something else. I had been taking the Gymnema to help with my sugar levels and things like that. Does that lower the A1C as well as your regular sugar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anything that helps consistently lower your blood sugar back to a reasonable range is going to lower what's called your hemoglobin A1C.
How long does it usually take for that to lower the A1C?
Well, there's a lot of factors. And so, like, for example, a man called me on the phone this week and he said, I just got my blood test in. It says my hemoglobin A1C is 16.1. I thought, oh, dear, we better move that the other direction pretty quick. But when you take... Excuse me for a second. When you take Gymnema, it has a very unique ability to do several things for you. And so I know I'm kind of overstating this a little bit, but if you told me, I just cannot control myself with sweets, it's horrible. Well, if you took a tablet of Gymnema and you just disciplined yourself to or committed to sucking on that for 2 minutes, you know, in your mouth or on your tongue before you would give in to the piece of chocolate, you know, cake or whatever, I'm pretty sure it would kill your desire to eat the sweets. So that can be good. Mm-hmm. I've used that so many times when somebody tells me they just cannot break their addiction to alcohol. They can't stop it. Well, if you suck on a tablet of Gymnema for 2 minutes before you take a sip of whiskey, I'm willing to guess that about 90% of people are saying, there's no way I can't do it. My body won't let me. And so when you do it that way, I think there's a very fast response when you swallow it. I think it has a very tremendous benefit toward healing your pancreas's ability to handle blood sugar. So if you take Gymnema consistently and you do your part, which is to not load your body up with heavy grains and starches and sugars, you're going to be in a better place probably in about 3 weeks. So can I just make up some numbers here? If you told me your blood sugar is 201 in the morning and you have what's considered type 2 diabetes, if you took Gymnema and sucked on it for 2 minutes before every meal, I'm almost willing to bet that we can knock 75 points off that blood sugar in about 2 weeks tops. So that would be impressive, wouldn't it? But the other thing that I want to just nail home, these insulin receptor sites that are found on the surface of your cells, you improve every one of those if you just did one thing every day, if you just walked or exercised.
Okay.
And a 30-minute walk that's gentle is one of the ways to do that. See, one of the hormones that really makes people crave is called cortisol. Have you ever heard of cortisol?
Yes.
Well, insulin and cortisol, they almost always track each other. And one study that I read recently showed that when women would walk for 30 minutes in the morning, first thing, their cortisol and insulin levels were much, much lower later in the day as compared to women that don't do that. So if all you did was just say, I'm going to commit to just 10 minutes, maybe walk 5 minutes from your front door and turn around and walk back in 5 minutes for a 10-minute walk. Mm-hmm. I think it's more, if you consistently do something every day, then you've got a habit. Then you can start adding to it if you want to. But it's hard to lower blood sugar for persons on starches and grains.
Yeah, I've limited a lot of that. I know when I so-called fall off the wagon and have too much sugar, I've taken the Gymnema and it has really lowered it. I mean, it's
good. Oh, wow.
And I thought, well, this is good, you know.
Yeah, so you've kind of proven it's true.
And my husband had taken it, too, and his is just fine. The doctor had told him when he had his blood sugar checked that he was needing diabetic medicine, and his blood sugar was only 119. And I thought, why would he need to, you know, get on medicine when it's just 119? And so we cut out the sugar, and he took the Gymnema, and his has been less around 100 or 90 most all the time.
And that's like a 20% improvement in a short period of time. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so proud of him. Tell him I said so.
I will. Okay. Well, I appreciate the information, and thank you for the help. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and I'm glad you called today. Have a good day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
I try hard not to multitask and do two things at once because I just can't do it. I'm a man. If I was a woman, sure, I could probably juggle three things at once, but I can't. Good morning. You have a couple minutes left.
Hi, my name is Donna.
Hello, Donna.
I'm calling because I actually have problems with my lungs. Recently, they've been on the news about vaping, how it's bad for you and everything. I've never done it. But 3 years ago, I got sick out of nowhere. And my husband was doing it at the time. And they couldn't find what's wrong with me. It's still 3 years later, and I'm still seeing doctors and trying to find out why I have holes in my lungs and why I can't breathe correctly.
They said you have holes in your lungs?
Yeah. So 3 years ago, they found that on the side of both my lungs, they had, it was ripping apart on the side, and that liquid was forming. My body was making this liquid, and I was basically drowning myself.
Oh, my goodness. Did they say there's any possibility of you having an autoimmune disease that's targeting your lungs?
That's actually what they're looking for now, but they haven't found any results. Everything comes up negative.
Well, okay, but, you know, you and I are on the same page here because we're both thinking, well, what can we do in the meantime until they give me a diagnosis?
Exactly.
All right, let me give you a plan right here. I've only got, like, about 1 minute, all righty?
Okay.
I'm going to devote it all to you. Okay. These are only ideas, and I can't flesh them out, but there's an herb called mullein.
Mullein.
Mm-hmm. I want you to start sipping on mullein tea every single day.
Mullein tea.
Mm-hmm.
Where can I get something like that?
Probably a health food store or online. So if you type in the word mullein, you'll be able to get it in an alcohol tincture, a glycerin tincture. You can get it bags of tea. You can get it in the bulk herb, however you want it, capsules. Just start taking mullein.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, now that you do, you can start doing it. The next thing that I want you to think of is, I want you to, there's a substance that I use all the time when somebody comes in with a lung problem that no one can solve, and it's a product called Emphaplex. And I know this sounds gross, but it's made from the lung tissue of a calf. But it contains what's called PMGs, or proto-morphogen glandulars. And these are molecules that tell your body you need to heal the lungs and heal them right now. Cover these holes up, get rid of them, make sure they don't leak in my own, I don't have fluid. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but if you'll call me back next week, I'll walk you through the rest of it on how to get your lungs completely well.
All right, then.
And then you can sign up for the marathon, okay?
Oh, okay.
All right, thank you, man. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Bye.